Welcome to Electronically Yours with Martin Ware.
Hi, it's Martin here, Electronically Yours, as always. Well, this was quite enlightening. I've always been a fan of Soft Cell, for obvious reasons. I've always been interested in the fact that they are they have a kind of dark edge, but they're also playful as well. I've been friends with Mark for a long time. I've even produced him in the past. But I've never, ever met Dave Ball. And as he says in the talk that we've just done, is very... I mean, their process is basically he writes the music and Mark writes the top lines and the lyrics. And he's, you know, he's done so much stuff with some pretty edgy people, actually, like Genesis P Origin, Psychic TV. I loved a lot of the stuff he did with The Grid. He's produced lots of excellent stuff. I mean, Nonstop Erotic Cabaret, the first Soft Cell album, is just a great album. Mark Almond called him a genius. I think he's really, really good. His records sound beautiful. Some people have that thing where they automatically know how to arrange things, and it could be electronic, it could be for an orchestra, it could be, you know, they don't have to work that hard at it. They just understand where things fit, and I'm pretty sure he's one of a good example of that. And interestingly enough, one of my themes over these interviews has been usually asking people who are producers whether they're synesthetic or not. And he claims he thinks he is. And I think most people that have a kind of picture in the head of how they want a song to sound and the arrangements are pretty much normally answer that question by saying they feel they have some kind of synesthetic element to what they do, which I find quite interesting. And we talk about how he met Mark and his love of Northern Soul. And, you know, they're one of these interesting people that's always got side projects going on. How he's influenced by the early Human League. Thank you very much. And Autobahn, and working with people like Kylie Minogue and Vicious Pink and blah, blah, blah. So, very enlightening. Never met him before. What a lovely guy. Here he is, Dave Ball. How are you keeping? Good?
Well, I'm bearing up, you know.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
Considering the circumstances.
Yeah.
And yourself, you well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I felt from time to time like I'm going insane, but
I think we all. Well, we've been doing a lot. What I've done is spend the time with Dave, who I'm with at the moment. We've been just doing loads of ambient stuff.
Yeah.
And just like ambient jams, to say what key is it in, and make a tempo so it can be anything that's divisible by 10. And we've actually produced. We've got three albums with stuff out of that. So
Kind
of focusing the kind of creativeness, so that, you know, because you're stuck on your own all the time. It's a nightmare, isn't it?
Really? Yeah, it is. I
have kind of moments of elation and moments of complete, absolute depression.
Yeah, really.
I'm probably drinking too much as usual, but even worse than usual, you know.
Yeah, something you have to...
If you're on your own... You
have to keep an eye on that stuff. I mean, wonder.
I know. My doctor's off as well.
Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it.
No, I've looked forward to it because I'm, you know, obviously a massive admirer of your work.
And your work.
Well, particularly the first two Human League albums. I mean, I said I put a couple of tracks on, like The Black Hit of Space, which reminds me of, that's how I feel about Tainted Love. It's like, make it go away. You know, one of my favourite albums, electronic albums, between Autobahn and Travelogue, I think those are possibly my two favourite electronic albums of all time.
So, well, you're
fine with Kraftwerk.
you can be my PR agent anytime.
I don't anytime. I remember seeing you guys. I remember seeing you guys the first time I saw them I think you were playing with Per Ubu.
Yeah.
The F Club in Leeds. And because the F Club was fantastic, run by a guy called John Keenan. And I saw Joy Division there. I saw the original Human League with the Perspex Cases, Cabaret right. Voltaire, Per Ubu, Throbbing Gristle. That's the first time I saw Throbbing Gristle. It was an absolutely brilliant place.
Wow.
It was when Phil still had his lopsided hair.
Yeah. He could only afford to get one side of it cut. That was... Not quite.
I used to cut my own.
I wish I had some hair to cut. But anyway. Tell us about... did you meet in Leeds with Mark?
I originally grew up in Blackpool. Mark came from Southport, and we converged at Leeds Polytechnic doing a fine art course. And Mark was doing a performance art, which I had no idea what the hell that was. And I was just quite good at drawing and painting. I was also very, after craft work, I'd kind of bought myself, I got a Fender Telecaster. I thought I wasn't really good at playing guitar, so I thought I wanted a synthesizer. I'd heard Autobahn, and then I was in Blackpool to see my mum, who recently widowed, and I saw this secondhand. It was a Korg 800 DV or DV 800. What D? I prefer DV 8.
Yeah, DV 8. That sounds better, doesn't it?
So I bought that, and they had a little sound room in the street, in the big art room in Leeds, and I used to noodle around, and Mark overheard this and said to me, he came in and said, have a cup of tea, do you want to do some sounds for my performance art? Because I'd never thought of performing, I was just writing these stupid little tunes. And I said, yeah, brilliant, you know, and that's how it started. So really, I was just doing this sort of soundtracks for these weird, you know, mirror fucking sort of performances, and Mark was smearing himself with cat food, and much to the outrage of some Manchester University students. We did a live show there, so it was always outrageous from the start.
That sounds very similar to kind of my background with the kind of arts youth club we used to go to, where I met Phil. No, I didn't meet Phil there. I met Phil in my secondary school, but I met Glenn and Ian. A place where we used to do all that weird kind of performance art thing. And
yeah,
it's interesting how the more interesting end of music, the musicians that are more self-taught, more kind of have broader interests, tend to come out with the more interesting stuff. I mean, I've never had a music lesson in my life.
Ditto. But I think it's where it's like brain, you know, it's like, yeah. You know, it's like painting with sound, really. And I mean, Eno was an art club. A lot of the great, great musicians come from an art school background, I think, particularly in the UK.
Yeah.
And I was the same. Whenever I'm doing music, I always think of sound as colours. It's a kind of synesthesia sort of thing, you know.
Do you literally have some degree of synesthesia, do you think?
I think I do. Because when I play a sound, I'm thinking of a colour. I remember talking to Martin Rushen, funny enough, who went on to produce your band after it changed. He always talked about having the horizon. When you're doing a mix, you have this horizon. And, you know, I kind of sort of knew what he meant. But, you know, you've got the rhythm bit and there's the stuff above it. And it's kind of like the way you arrange things. I think that's the same with classical music. There's a sort of horizon, you know, that goes there and that goes, you know, I don't know how to explain it.
Do you think that you have do you feel like, I know what I think, but I want to know what you think about your talent. Do you think you've always had an innate ability and understanding of how to arrange things? Because I DJ that period from time to time, and my influence is earlier than that. And, you know, we all know how popular Tainted Love is, and we all know... But on any system that you play that on, it sounds fantastic. So I think, essentially, that you know, you had an it's not just the way it was EQ'd or compressed or whatever it is. It's about understanding how things slot together in sound terms. And I do think you've had that as an ability from a very early stage, working with synthesizers.
I think it's more to do with maybe possibly a lack of ability than the fact that the minimalism was because it was simplistic. But I think when I've gone through phases where I tried to be a bit clever. I remember when I got a Prophet 5, and it was the first time I got a polyphonic synth, and you could play chords on it. And I think in some ways that damaged me a bit until I eventually understood, no, you don't have to, just because you can play five notes with one hand, you don't have to.
Yeah,
exactly. I think Mike Thorne on Sounds Well Taken of It was still very one finger. I mean, I was using an old Korg SB Synthi Bass 100, which I still have. It's a beautiful sound. It's different to the Moog, but it's just like, dum, 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 dum. And then we had the sort of nice glacial pads of the Synclavier. So it's a complete opposite. I mean, a Synclavier costs about £120,000.
Oh, my God, they were expensive.
I had never seen that much money in my life. I mean, it was Mike's ones, not mine.
All right.
But it was like, I like the contrast because we got, I think we, well, the Change of Love was, we used, it wasn't even an 808, it was a TR-78, which was only a mono output, which would be borrowed off Marshall Hayne. You know, the people that did
Dancing in the City.
We borrowed it off Kit Hayne, because Mike knew her. We were in AdVision Studios. And then when we went to New York, because obviously Take It Up became a hit, so we did the first album. And Mike had probably got, I think he'd been to Manny's Music Store in New York. Don't you ever went?
I have.
No longer with us, I'm afraid, sadly. Most famous music store in New York.
Yeah.
And he got, I think he got the first TR-808 in America.
Right.
And so you get all these hip-hop guys here. There isn't a film about the 808. I think the first record that had an 808 on it in the pop charts in Britain was Bedsitter. Because that was the first time I ever used an 808.
That is,
and that's why you listen to the drums on that, it's so random.
That is a great tune. Great tune, by the way. Congratulations.
But it's like Keith Moon with electronics.
Same with me and the Lindrum, actually.
I never liked the Lindrums.
See, I did because I didn't like using real drummers because they couldn't keep time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, when we first signed the Phonogram, they wanted us to get a bass guitarist and a drummer.
Right.
No, we're a synth duo. They didn't understand the concept of a synth duo.
Yeah.
You know, and then look what happened afterwards. Ah!
Exactly. So when you perform, I never saw you perform live back in that time. Was it literally just the two of you on stage?
And several tape recorders.
Of course.
Which was David Girl, like yourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we'd have and I would just do random sort of wild synths and Mark on live, all the vocals was live, of course. And I just, I just play along and, you know, affect things and stuff. So treatments, what have you.
Was it your idea to do the 12-inch of Where Did Our Love Go? Because that is...
Go on. Unfortunately, that's one of the most stupid mistakes of my life. Even though I actually got a nice signed book from the Holland Brothers. Because I must have made them about £1 million from that. Because we had no idea about publishing.
Right.
The thing was that our management and the publishers didn't say, put your own track on the B-side or... But because it worked so well, and it's like...
Oh, it's beautiful.
And so we made lots of money for Motown.
But just as a piece of work, let alone that issue, I've got total admiration for it. I mean, it's a great DJ nipping off to the Bog record.
It is. Well, my favourite bit, though, is I always quote the Lancaster bomber descending.
Yeah.
Because what he used when it goes up, and people go, how low can this go? And it was like a Moog ribbon controller hooked up to a Synclavier.
Right.
So it was just like getting the, and just literally to do it by hand. So it's like, ooh, and it goes about over about 16 bars.
In a night.
And I think that's a masterpiece, that bit.
Yeah,
that's my favourite bit of that record.
Yeah, mine too, actually, funnily enough. So
let's
we
play
know
it backwards.
Yeah.
To a remix backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you want to do the remix.
Yeah, exactly. I want to talk about your process, about how you write. I mean, let's start with how you wrote, say, Nonstop Erotic Cabaret. What I mean, did you do? Did Mark just do the top lines? Did you do all the music? How did it work?
Well, at that time, Mark and I were living in this sort of housing authority place in a dodgy part of inner city Leeds. Oops, someone pinged. And I had one room. I was on like the third floor, and then Mark had the next room. They were just like little flats, and I had a couple of little synths and my mum's old stereo, and I just like write tunes. I mean, I wrote Sail Away Goodbye, Bedsitter, actually when we were living in a bedsit, really. And then wow. I just give him cassettes, say, yeah, I've just done this one. So I just give him the music, and he had this massive book full of like all these lyric ideas, and I was never really actively involved in writing lyrics, and he was never involved in the music, although he would kind of go, I've got an idea for a top line for this, or I said I've got an idea for a title, so, but mostly it was, I do the music and give the music to Mark, and then he would come up with, you know, so Sail Away Goodbye was totally up to Mark. He said, let's try and do something a bit walkabout.
Yeah.
So it's a bit sort of sentimental and
yeah.
A bit 60s kind of vibe. And that's with Sail Away Goodbye. But Betsy's was obvious because that's where we were living, you know. So it was kind of, yeah, it was all about quite real and fantasy.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like the reality and the fantasy. You know, that's kind of what we're, I mean, some's always been about that kind of reality and escapism and social commentary and where you're at and where you want to be, you know. It's, I think it's always been that. I mean, the new album, which I'm not supposed to tell you the name of, is very much based
you
on
must
reality.
Tell me the name.
No, you're not getting out of me, I'm afraid.
When is it coming? All right, you can tell me when it's coming.
Well, apparently, you know, because of... Well, no, I was told the other day, because we were hoping it was going to come out later this year, but because there's been a massive backlog of people wanting to do vinyl, I think it's now going to come out in 2020. But there will be some...
2021?
Well, no, we're in 2021, aren't we?
No. You said 2020.
What year are we in?
2021.
Yeah, we're in 2021.
2022,
oh,
sorry. God, no, I can't tell anymore.
We're in 2021.
I'm living in 1983, mate.
You're going into reverse. It's Billy Button or whatever. Pressing too many buttons. So, yeah, I think we're in 2021.
Yeah, we are. Definitely in 2021.
No, you're just reversing time now. Back to the future. Your first band.
Good idea.
Excellent.
Oh, good, name for a good name for an album.
Yeah. It's all right. That's not our album.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. So in 2022, you're going to bring out the album now.
2022?
Yeah.
That's it. Did I just confused, didn't I? It's coming out in 2020. That's,
and
yeah.
Are you going to tour it?
I have no idea.
Right. Playing a straight bat.
Well, no, I think, I mean, we allegedly played our last gig at the O2, so I can't.
Right.
I mean, there's people going, oh, why didn't you play? Why didn't you play? There's a mad guy, I don't know what his name is, who keeps sending emails from Australia saying, why don't you come to Australia? Why
didn't
you
come to Australia? Yeah.
I've only been to Australia once with The Grid.
Right.
Blooming Journeys. Have you been to Australia?
Honestly, you feel like death, don't you?
It's just like, I think I put me off flying forever.
Yeah, yeah, really. I've got a good story, actually. I once went to do a proposal with some colleagues of mine for this big installation in China. And they said, would you come to a meeting to present it to like this big, you know, hall full of experts and stuff. It was for like some architectural biennale or something. Anyway, so they said, "Will you come over and present it to the people there?" And what, do I get a free trip to China? This is great. So went with them to Shanghai. The only problem was we had to come back the same day.
To China?
No. To Shanghai.
Did you actually fly to China and back?
Yeah. Not in a day. I mean, we were only there for like 6 hours.
Oh, my God.
But I'd say Shanghai looked great from what I saw of it.
And we didn't, like 2 minutes.
Even worse, I didn't get the gig. Oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so where were we? We were talking about the process and everything and how you wrote that album. So tell me about, did that come out on Some Bizarre?
Yes, that was with Steve-O's label.
Steve-O's a nutcase, isn't he? I've met him a few times.
Yeah, I know, because the last time I came to your thing at the National Portrait Gallery.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did, yes.
That was good, wasn't it?
I speak to you. And I was with a few friends, and suddenly I heard this voice going, "All right, mate." Oh, no, it's Steve-O. I'm like, I'm going.
Oh, no, it's Steve-O. It should be a TV
show. That guy just does my head in. I mean, he was brilliant at the time. He was like, back in the day, in the early 80s, I mean, he was like the best A&R man in Britain.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll always sing his praises. I mean, the Some Bizarre album, he had Depeche Mode, Blancmange, the Soft Cell. I mean, just to sign those four bands was like unbelievable. And he was like 17, I think, at the time. I mean, an incredible A&R man.
Wow.
You know, if he'd not been such, well, I don't know. I think his ego and his youthfulness and exuberance and excess of various things, you know, probably got the better of me. I mean, that guy should be a multimillionaire running a major label right now. You know, if he kept his head together, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories like that, aren't there, in the music?
I mean, he's fundamentally a decent bloke, you know, but I think, I don't know, things, I think it all happened. I mean, it was amazing for us. We were a bit older, but for a 17-year-old to have like this incredible success at that age, and like, to come from his background, to come from a tough sort of East End background. So I've got nothing but respect for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I just find him a bit. He's just too much to handle, really.
it's a bit like Rusty Egan, isn't it? It's like it's everything so full on,
yes,
all the time.
I know Rusty very well.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
I'm still in touch with. I've known Rusty from back in the day. I used to know Steve. I used to get on better. Well, I got on well with Steve and Rusty. Steve was really funny. He's a lovely guy. I'm sadly missing. You know, he's. He was just cheeky. The last time I saw Steve Strange, Dave, can you lend us 20 quid?
Steve Strange is a lovely guy.
He was amazing. He was a great guy. I mean, couldn't sing to say for a toffee, but he did all right with Vizard to one album.
Yeah, I know Rusty's a bit bitter and twisted about that because there's dispute about all that stuff. But anyway. I still love all that. So, I mean, we're not far off the same age, me and you.
No.
Are we? A couple of years in it. So our cultural references are very similar, aren't they? I mean, Bolan, Bowie, Barry, John Barry. And
John Barry, absolutely. Yeah, I met John Barry.
Did you?
I met him at Trident Studios. They were doing the demos for a Bond theme and... and so I think I was in Nottingham in the studio with the band, and someone phoned me from the studio and said, "Dave, John Barry's here with Tim Rice. The Rita Coolidge." What was the track she did? I can't remember what it was called. And I said, "Right, I want the next train." And John
Nobody
Barry.
Does It Better. Is that the one?
No, it's not. I can't remember which track it is. Yeah. It wasn't one of the better ones. It wasn't a Shirley Bassey.
I'll look it up.
But I was always massively. I mean, I think we've got more John Barry records than I've got soul records. I think I've got over 100 albums of John Barry on vinyl, and about another 100 singles, 7 inches. and even the stuff he did with Adam Faith and all that sort of stuff, because he worked with so many people.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, amazing.
Beautiful, beautiful. Have you ever wanted, have you written film soundtracks?
I've only done a couple. I did a German film with Genesis Piolage for a film called Decoder, which it was on FET film, which was it had Christiana F in it and William Burroughs was in it. And I think Jen did it, actually. And that's like a cult classic. And I did another thing for Channel 4, which is called The Investigator, which starred Helen Baxendale. And that was, it was basically a true story and about this woman called, what's her name, Caroline Meehan. And it was about investigating sort of homosexuality in the army. And they were investigating lesbianism or alleged lesbianism in the armed forces. So I did, so I've not really done a massive, I mean, our music's been used, obviously, Take Your Love gets used on everything. So that's been on quite a lot of films. I mean, like, you know, La La Land they always pick the one you don't want them to use.
Yeah. I'm just happy they pick anything, to be honest. But,
anything we've got, yeah.
He's called John Barry Prendergast, I didn't know.
Yes, that's his real name, yeah.
How interesting. What a composer. I mean, I'm obsessed with film.
Oh, genius.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Ennio Morricone had a big impact on
me. Well, I've seen them both live. I saw John Barry twice at the Royal Albert Hall. I saw Ennio Morricone when it was his 70th birthday at the Royal Albert Hall, and then everybody sang, Happy birthday to Ennio, which was quite amazing. But, yeah.
I saw him playing in Venice, actually, where he used to
live. Oh, a bit posh.
Bit posh, isn't it?
Yeah.
So tell me about your relationship with Mark. I mean, you obviously love each other like brothers.
Well, of course, I adore him. He's a genius. I mean, his lyrics. The latest album, I'm not going to tell you the name of, the lyrics are, I mean, they are so profound. I mean, they're brilliant, absolutely wonderful. I listen, they make me laugh and they almost make me cry, but they're just so brilliant. Mark's lyrics have always been, to me, have been absolutely a godsend. I think some people, you know, I think the BBC only seems to ever play Take Your Love because I think they're a bit scared of his lyrics because they're a bit too real. I think Mark's social commentary is incredible.
I agree. So he dresses it up in an interesting way, doesn't he? So it's kind of not overt, but it's like plain. He has this amazing ability to connect with people, I think.
Well, I always think of, when people ask me, how does soft sell work? And I basically, my analogy of it is that I provide the soundtrack and Mark provides the narrative.
Right.
So imagine you're putting a film together. Like I do the score and Mark does the script. And I think kind of because a lot of the stuff we do is very, I think it's very filmic and telling a story. And I just try to provide him with a score behind it. And I think it kind of works.
Does it start? Does it ever start from the story and then you write a piece of music?
Mark would say a track like Monoculture. I remember I used to have a studio just off Ladbroke Grove with a guy called Ingo Rohr, this German fellow I used to work with. And Mark came over and we were still messing around recording some stuff. And he just came out, he said something Monoculture. I just said, that's a brilliant title. He's like, really? And I said, yeah, write some words. I mean, he wrote about four bookloads of lyrics. He'd always write like tons of lyrics. I said, maybe you need to edit it down a bit. And that became the track Monoculture, which is,
wow.
The fans seem to love that. And I made sure I wrote it in the same key as Memorabilia. So
When
we start our set, it goes Memorabilia, Monoculture, and it's the same tempo. Quite a good way to open a set, you know.
So, you're a big fan of Northern Soul, aren't you? Like I am.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you go dancing to any of the famous
Well, songs? I was never very good, but I was a good listener.
Right.
I can't say. I mean, probably the reason I have problems with my lower back and my hips now is probably from attempted backflip, so probably not very well executed. I suffer. Now I have to go walking stick sometimes.
I can't
do painkillers because you can't go to the loo.
All right, okay.
You get on the codeine phosphate.
Oh, no.
You need to be eating tins of prunes all day.
So which clubs did he go to?
I was mostly based in Blackpool, so it's Blackpool Mecca.
Right.
I mean, there was Wigan. I only went there once, twice. And there was a Blackpool casino. So there was loads of Northern Soul was everywhere in Blackpool, you can imagine. But it was mostly the Blackpool Mecca.
Right.
This was where Ian Levine and Colin. Ian Levine went to my school.
Get away.
He was a sixth former when I first started,
Isn't it a small world? Jesus.
I know, it's amazing. And he had the most amazing collection, Northern Soul.
He used to go to America and pick him up in America, didn't he?
Well, no, because he had rich parents. Because they used to own a club called the Lemon Tree. It was a casino in Blackpool. It was at the posh end of Blackpool, sort of very south part of Blackpool. And his mum and dad used to go to Miami and stuff. And,
really?
And he'd come back with, like, crates of records and stuff. I read a story that they hired a private jet and he couldn't take off because... too many records. They said you're going to have to leave some of this behind, which is quite a funny thought.
That's a great thing.
He was an obsessive collector, though. I think he owned episodes of Doctor Who. I heard this on the radio actually yesterday. I think it was on LBC, and he was saying that Ian Levine actually had some episodes of Doctor Who because the BBC used to chuck away.
Took
away the tapes or record so loads of brilliant stuff was lost, and he's got some unscreened episodes of Doctor Who.
Wow.
He's a mad collector, apparently. I don't know him personally. I've met him a couple of times, but
I've met him a couple of times. He's a very interesting guy. I did an art installation in Blackburn about Northern Soul because I have a company that we've got our own immersive three-dimensional sound system. In fact, this is my studio I'm in at the moment. And
it looks very posh where you are,
blind. Oh, yeah, not for the likes of you.
I just work in my kitchen nowadays. Kitchen drama studios.
No,
just me and a little keyboard and a Mac.
I'm obviously a lot of people do everything in the box nowadays, but I kind of like still having an old-fashioned studio.
No, absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, my favourite new synth, I've got a couple of them, is the Moog Mother, the Mothers. They're beautiful.
Really?
I mean, you get a couple of those and you just tune it up. It's like having a new mini Moog.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I do like them. Yeah, they're great.
Anyway, back to Blackburn. I was saying we did this installation in three-dimensional sound where we made people sit in a circle like an AA meeting, right? And we made them sit...
I wouldn't know anything about that.
So my friends tell me. So they were sat there in this ex-Northern Soul club that had been closed for 20 years and not touched. So absolutely beautiful. It's
beautiful.
called the Empress Ballroom in the centre of...
I've heard of it.
Beautiful 1930s sprung floor, the real...
Like Wigan, the sprung dance floors.
Yeah, exactly. And like plaster falling off the walls, and it's still got the original list of beers on the behind the bar with like a shilling for a... for a Guinness and stuff. Anyway, so we did this thing, and in 3D sound, we made people sit around listening to the working week of a normal person. And then the idea is, it's last 20 minutes, condensed. And then at the end, it turns into everybody goes to the Northern Soul Club.
Yeah, and that's off steam.
And all the lights come on. This has been completely derelict, this building, remember?
Oh, wow.
All the lights come on. Everything kicks off, and then real Northern Soul dancers come in. It's like ghosts coming to life. And I did a big Northern Soul compilation and some electronic versions and stuff. It was fucking awesome.
That's always been something I've been fascinated with, like doing. I mean, well, I've done quite a few tracks, obviously Tainted Love, What?
Yeah, yeah.
We did The Night as well, so we've done like quite a few. But it was funny, the last video we did with Soft Cell, we did it in Manchester, we went to the Twisted Wheel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's not the original venue, but they've moved it. But the guy, the owner, is like really pleased, comes over here. And he's showing me the actual original wheel, and he's still got it, and there was actually a Twisted Wheel.
Oh, really?
And we got loads of the original people that used to go there dancing to this track we did called Northern Lights. Which is like a sort of homage.
Yeah, yeah.
To a sort of Northern Soul. It's like I was going out, doffing our caps a bit, really.
Yeah.
That wasn't a smash hit, but it was still a nod and thank you very much for the music, really.
Yeah, you know, there's still a flourishing Northern Soul scene.
There is in London. I mean,
new generation.
London. I mean, the 100 Club. There's a massive Northern Soul. Northern Soul's massive in Japan.
Yeah.
Germany, Japan. It's a global thing now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very huge thing. It's massive.
If you ever fancy doing a Northern Soul themed album with electronics, I'd be very interested in doing it.
Let me know when.
Well,
I'll be in touch. Right, okay, you're on.
Maybe we could write something together. That's like
right. Let's do it. Right.
Homage. Yeah, homage to.
Where are you based at the moment?
King's Cross.
Oh, you're only up the road. I'm in Kennington, so
not a
hop, skip, and a jump.
Do you know what?
Let's do something. That's brilliant. I love it.
It's a good idea, isn't it? What about?
I'll shake your hand. Are you? It's a virtual handshake.
Virtual handshake.
Keep the faith.
Yeah, yeah. Keep the faith. Yeah. What was I going to say?
That's game on.
Apart from anything else, I'd love to show you the 3D sound system. I think you'd find it fascinating for your
Is this in your studio?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wicked!
I'm going to write it down, and then that's it. You can't get out of it. I'm going to hunt you down.
I'm game on. Yeah. That's like Floyd. Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd did immersive sound, but that was more like
that was quadraphonic, wasn't it?
Quadraphonic, yeah.
That
was quadraphonic. No, this has got a high
joystick.
This has got a height axis as well, so you can move things in any direction. It's fucking amazing.
Wow!
Me and Vince Clark have had a company for 20 years doing big.
You and Vince Clark?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
I've just been
working with Andy Bell, funny enough.
Yeah, Andy's a good mate.
Because we're working with we're doing some grid stuff, and Andy's over here at the moment because he can't get back to the States because they've got a massive tour coming up, haven't they?
Yeah,
they're touring all over Europe.
They're always touring. They only have to do it every 2 years. They've got such a loyal following around the world.
Oh, I know. I saw the last gig when they played in Hammersmith at the event. Because they're doing the O2, aren't they? I'm going to the O2. I think that's later this year. Yeah, they're doing the O2. That's the funny thing. The last gig we did was at the O2. And the next shows, we might be going to the event in Apollo. And they're doing the O2 this time. So there's possibly some shows, but let's see.
I'll have to tap him up for some free VIP treatment, I think. He owes me. Anyway, no, we've had a company for 20 years called Illustrious, where we've been...
I didn't know you knew him that well.
Yeah, yeah, we've been doing enormous immersive sound installations for public art installations around the world for 20 years.
I never knew that.
Go and have a look. Illustriouscompany.co.uk. Have a look.
Before
you come to the studio, and then you'll know what to look for.
Illustriouscompany.co.uk,
yeah. All spelt out like that, yeah. Illustrious Company spelled.
I'll find it. Illustriouscompany.co.uk.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
brilliant.
I never knew
anything about that.
Yeah, yeah. So then there's I produced their album, I Say.
Well, the Erasure one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've done a remix for them, and Vince has done a remix. Well, both of them did a remix for I think they did Bedsitter. And I did Am I Right, did a remix for that, which they seem to like. Well, funny enough, because I've just signed my publisher with Daniel Miller. So I'm now signed with New Songs. And I've always loved Dan. And
Dan's a great man.
No, I've always wanted to work with him anyway. I mean, because obviously he did the first single, Memorabilia, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he even did the demo of Tainted Love. The first demo was with Daniel Miller.
Is that right?
Yeah, so I've known Daniel for a long time. Yeah, 40 years. It's amazing. So I know you're like, Christ, isn't that long? Yeah.
Yeah, no.
It is.
Good Lord. So were you ever on mute? No. Yes?
No. We were some bizarre... Because I think at the time, back in the day, Steve-O wanted to sign Depeche and Soft Cell, and Daniel wanted to sign Depeche and Soft Cell. So
right.
I think Daniel made the right choice. In terms of money, I think Depeche Mode might have made a few quid more than us.
Yeah, I know what I think. I mean, I think they went too rock for my taste. But I like the purity of your vision, your artistic vision, and Soft Cell's artistic vision.
No, right. I think Depeche Mode from the Violator, I think, is brilliant.
Yeah.
I think Ultra was great, produced by Tim Simenon. That was a great album.
Yeah.
So I remember I had a studio in that same yard where East Coast Studios are, and that's where they were recording all that stuff with Tim. So they're an amazing band, aren't they? I mean, fantastic. They're the biggest electronic band we've ever produced.
Probably the
biggest electronic band in the world, even including Kraftwerk. I think they probably outsold Kraftwerk.
In terms of sales, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of influence, not, but...
Yeah.
Kraftwerk is still there, like,
They're the gods in Asgard, aren't they?
Absolutely.
We're not quite there yet.
No.
Ever. Okay, let's look at all the people you've worked with. It's really an impressive list of, I mean, Genesis P. Orridge, you know. I'm hoping to interview Chris and Cozy.
We're doing some work with them at the moment.
Are you? Great. Mm. And then you work Virgin Prunes as well.
So well, it's quite diverse because I've gone from Genesis Piores to Kylie Minogue.
I know, and Kylie Minogue.
But I think I kind of like Subversion, really, or Transgression.
Transgression. She's become transgressive as she got older. And then Psychic TV, you were part of as well. Is that right?
Well, I used to play on some of the stuff, and I used to play live occasionally with them. I'd do a few gigs with them.
What was
and
that?
It was great. It was great because we used to rehearse at Robin Gristle's old studio, the Death Factory, which was in Martello Street in Hackney.
Right.
So I was just thrilled to be like, wow, this is the Death Factory. Because I was a massive TG fan.
Yeah, right.
I mean, both Mark and I were really influenced by TG because we liked the sort of, subversive transgressiveness.
Yeah.
The fact that they were dealing with very dodgy subjects, you know, and it's like Persuasion and stuff like that. It's like, whoa, this is a bit heavy.
Yeah.
And that always appealed to us, so, you know.
I've got.
I said, yeah, that was great. And I remember tuning Jen's bass guitar up. And I said, Jenny, I remember picking it up. He was showing me the Gristleizer, this box. I was like, what's that? He said, the Gristleizer. Plug that bass guitar in. So I picked it up. I said, it's out of tune. I think this is my book, actually. I think it's out of tune. He said, oh, don't worry, it hasn't been tuned for 10 years since I bought it. So I tuned up his bass guitar, saying, I possibly wrecked the thumping whistle sound. But as soon as you plugged it into this box, it just sounded like TG.
That's a classic joke, isn't it? It was in tune when
amazing.
I bought it. Yeah.
Hey?
It was that classic joke, it was in tune when I bought it.
Well, there's another classic joke, actually, referring to Jed, bless him, but he was in Rick Rubin's studio. And somehow he must have fallen out of the window and broke his arm and sued Rick Rubin for untold amounts and stuff. And his plea was to the court that I'll never be able to play the bass again. And someone said, you never can play it before anyway.
Oh, Will I be able to play the piano, Doctor? That's because I couldn't before. Yeah. Yeah. Vicious Pink, tell me about that. Goth electro pop.
I mean, I was only involved with that book from the very beginning because Brian and Josie were just two people we knew from Leeds Warehouse.
Right.
And she was the sort of hot chick, you know, with the miniskirts and the long legs.
Yeah.
And Brian was a good looking guy. We just said, well, we need some backing singers, a bit of atmosphere on stage and give them some disco whistles. So it was like, the early gigs were like parties. And everybody would be on the stage. So it was quite mad, you know. And so I said, look, I think I gave them the name. It was Vicious Pink Phenomenon. I don't know where I got it from. I did a couple of singles. We did My Private Tokyo, because I'd known a guy called David Claridge who ran a record label called the Mobile Suit Corporation, which did that Ever So Lonely record. Do you remember that record?
Oh, I really love that record.
That's a great record. And he was doing this sort of more kind of ethnically based sort of stuff. We didn't even know Vicious Pink were from Heckmond Way. But it was, I said, well, My Private Tokyo. So it had a bit of an Eastern vibe to it. And then I did not a very good version of Je T'aime. Well, then they went on, they worked with Mike Mansfield, I think, on New Music. And they never really had big hits. They still have a fan, you know, following.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen those guys for years.
Really? Okay. Oh, do you know David Sylvian, by the way?
I've never met him. I did the remix for Fripp and Sylvian. So I know Robert Fripp. I worked with Robert Fripp quite a bit.
Right.
And there's this track called Darshan, but I've never actually met David Sylvian.
Right, you know. I'm talking to him at the moment about getting on the podcast. I just wondered if I could use you for leverage. He's very kindly said he wants to do it, but he's in a different space, so he's assessing it at the moment.
Yeah,
he's quite a private person, I think.
No, I think he is, yeah, but I have no point of contact with him.
No, fine. What was Night Wreckage then?
Night Wreckage was just like a project, which was me with a guy who I still work with called Ricardo Mulhall, who's a sort of engineer, musician, a very good friend of mine that I've known for years. And there was a guy called Terry Neal, who I don't know what's happened to him, and another friend, Celine Hispiche, who she's like a performance artist, singer, writer, and it was like a sort of electro punk, I suppose you'd call it. And then we were working, we did that with a guy called Derek Savage, who used to look after Hazel O'Connor and the Stranglers. He was kind of their manager.
Right.
And he happened to be good friends with Martin Rushent.
All right, yeah.
And so that's how Martin Rushent became involved and sort of kind of finessed them and made the thing sound like proper, you know.
Yeah.
All the crap bass, and because we were still using Yamaha NSNs.
Oh, no, no.
And those things, all you can hear is like...
Oh, I hate
it. If you actually listen to it, it's all this horrible, murky crap on the bottom end. So he might as well listen to this, and he's just going to scrape all that, the bottom feeders out of there, you know. And it's like, poof, it suddenly sounds like, you know, a record.
Much.
So that was my one time when I got to work with Martin Rush. We did used to have arguments in the studio, but as in his own words, he said, "But I'm always right, Dave." Nothing that couldn't be settled with that meeting, buying lunch and a large red wine in the pub.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though he's supposed to be not drinking.
Oh, I see. And the in fact, when I was working with Billy McKenzie, we used to have arguments like that. And then he'd listen to what I was saying about how to make his record sound a bit better whilst keeping the essence of it right. And he'd go, oh, yes, hey, Martin, hey. Okay, we'll do it my way then, eh? You know, and not in a nasty way, just like really charming. And I just gave up after a bit. I was just like, all right, you can sound like you want to. and I'll just help with a few things. So The Grid, massive, massively successful. I mean, and some amazing productions. I mean, I was just listening to some this morning. I really like Roller Coaster.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. And Flotation, and oh my god! I mean, you know that you really tapped into it. You were a big steering part of that entire scene at that time, and the rave scene. And all, I love all that. I mean, how did you get into all that? How did that evolve?
Well, I think it's because I originally met Richard Norris because he was doing the column for the NME. Right. And he'd met Genesis, I think he interviewed Genesis Peorage, and they were talking about Acid House, and that no one knew what it was. And so they just thought, oh, it must be like kind of like psychedelic with, you know, samples and stuff. And so they got this little studio in Chiswick and said, I think Richard said to Jen, do you know anyone we can get in to play a bit? And Jen said, well, I know Dave Ball. So Jen phoned me and said, do you want to come down to the studio? I said, yeah, why not? I got my first sampler. It was a Casio FZ1 with a mighty expanded 2 megabyte. I mean, it's hard to believe. And those discs cost about 63 for 10. Ridiculous. And I got an HR16 and the MMTA, the Alesis drum machine and sequencer. So I was like, my new toys. And I went down there, did 3 tracks on that. And then Richard, he knew a guy called Martin Callaman, who was stuck working at the newly formed East West Records. Remember them? The sort of subsidiary of East West, subsidiary of Warner Brothers, I mean. And he said, look, do you want to do an album? Just do stuff that's like contemporary and like blah, blah, blah. You know, we're looking for some new stuff. And that's probably the first Grid album came out of that. But it wasn't really very successful. And we got jobs after it because they replaced the MD and Martin Callaman got sacked. But Flotation, funny enough, because I think we had the Andy Weatherall mix on that. So it just became like this mega Ibiza classic.
Yeah, well, it's just beautiful.
And Paul Oakenfold loved it. So the DJs all, you know, I think Paul Oakenfold actually did a version of it. He did a remix of it. So
Right.
It was one of those tracks that was kind of kicked in, you know.
Yeah, yeah. How did Swamp Thing evolve then? Where did that
go? Well, that was when I was living in Marylebone and I'd been out for dinner with my girlfriend. We're walking down Marylebone Lane.
I'm living in Marylebone Lane. I've just moved to Marylebone Lane.
Have you?
Right above the Steinway shop.
Well, I don't know that, I tell you. I used to live in Bulstrode Street.
Shut up.
Wow. Yeah, number 12 Bulstrode Street.
I love it around there. It's beautiful.
No, it's a nice, it's gone very upmarket now.
Yeah.
But so I was, what is the old Conadon? Is that still there? The Irish pub on the corner.
The old Conadon. They've changed the name of it now. It's the old Coach Makers Inn or something. But yeah, I was in there yesterday.
Yeah, but that's... So we're walking past. We've been for dinner. And I heard this music coming out. There's a live band on. And it was like sort of this weird Irish kind of bluegrass. I said, let's go in here for a drink. I want to listen to this. Because the rhythm of it. And then when they had a break, when they had an interval, I went over to this weird guy with long hair and tinted glasses, like a real stoner, but he's an amazing banjo player. And I just said to him, would you be interested in doing something in the studio? He's like, looked to me very kind of like, who is this guy? And I told him who I was. I said, you get like 300 quid. He's like, his eyes sort of peered over his glasses. Like, I get paid for it, all right. So he turned up at East Coast Studios and we got this rhythm track going. I just said, play some generic kind of bluegrass sort of, like Bella Fleck kind of stuff, you know. And we had the sort of rhythm track. And then, I mean, I don't think Richard or the engineer, they were looking at me like I'd gone crazy or something. What, Dave, are you sure about this? And we sold 1 million records. So it was number 1 in Australia. I got to number 3 here, then went down to 4, then back to 3. So we did that record. That was the biggest selling record we ever did.
Amazing.
The only problem is it's considered a bit of a novelty record. So I'm haunted by those two records, Taste Your Love and Swamp Thing. But they're the biggest selling ones.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you tap into that general public zeitgeist, it's quite an amazing thing. It's so immensely powerful, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It only happened a couple of times with us, but you know.
Well, you worked with Tina Turner, though, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, yeah. I meant on our own stuff, but yeah, Let's Play Together was.
Well, I think the early Human League stuff, those first two albums, they just never quite, and then obviously Dare was when you.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a great album.
Oh, it's amazing. Brilliant. I mean, that's mostly down to Martin Russians. I mean, he's like the sort of, what's his name? The fifth Beatle, you know, George Martin.
Yeah.
He's like the Human League's version of George Martin.
That's right. I agree.
You know. Well, you guys still got royalties up there, didn't you, I believe?
Are still getting 1% each off Dare.
Yeah. That's not bad, is it?
That's for giving them the name, to be fair. So, but we did actually blag silver and gold and platinum discs out of Virgin with our name on it, which we thought was so funny. Anyway,
well, I still think that the best Human League album was Travelogue.
Yeah,
I was listening to that last night. It's absolutely amazing.
It's an immense album. Most of that was written and recorded in our scuzzy studio in Sheffield,
brilliant.
On an eight track Ampex 1-inch.
I mean, it sounds brilliant.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Those machines sounded great, but it took about.
Well, that's the thing. Get the old tech out and have one in the corner.
Exactly.
I've even still got an old Porter Studio, and just use the EQ on a Porter Studio. Just use it as a bit of outboard.
Really?
EQ sounds amazing.
Is it? I'm gonna.
If you want to crunch things up, yeah.
Really?
Just use the ins and the sends and stuff. Not to be cool, but just use it as an EQ.
Right.
Four tracks of really severe EQ.
I love that idea. I'm going to
do it. Honestly, it works.
So people don't realize, we're getting close to the end there, but anyway, people don't realize that like the original Soft Cell period was only like 5 years, wasn't it? Is that right?
The original period, the first, we've started in 79 and we went to 84.
Yeah.
So we had a break till about 2000 or something.
Yeah.
So there's been that 2 17-year gaps.
Amazing.
I know. We have even longer gaps than Kraftwerk. But for the new album, I'm not allowed to mention what it's called. Sounds brilliant. I'm very, very pleased with it.
Are you? Which label is
it? Good. It's sounding really good. And if I can get you an advanced copy, I will.
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll be in touch. We're
going to come to my studio anyway.
Well, I'll have to come over. And we'll have to work on this Northern Soul idea. I love that.
Do you know? I reckon we could really do something.
No, that could be brilliant.
Out of the ordinary, because that shit never gets stale for me. I listen to those.
Well, they're great songs.
Yeah,
and great sentiments and great melodies
and great grooves as well. And
yeah.
All you really have to do is to translate or pass, I suppose they call it, P-A-R-S-E. It's like translation between that vernacular of a live band in a studio into like the electronic realm, and you're already winning, aren't you?
I think what you need, the other thing, I think what Mark Ronson did with Amy Winehouse,
yes,
that it gave you that authentic sound of the 60s, but still sounded contemporary.
Yeah,
although not like electronic, I think we'll go more electronic. But I like the way that he kind of transcribed that sound that she was really into. Obviously, the sort of 60s ballady, sort of Dusty Springfield or Petula Clark kind of vibe, and brought it up to date. You know, it's just bringing it into a new space, isn't it? Really,
exactly. So, are you around in the next few weeks? If I invite my studio. All right, as soon as we get off this, I'll send you an email.
Have you got my email address?
You better not give it out on the air.
I'm not going to give it out now, but I'll get Chris, my manager, to get in touch.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, are we done?
Not quite. No, I've got some. I've got some questions for you. Hold on. Okay. Everybody gets to answer these. What's your favourite film?
My favourite film is probably The Godfather 1.
No, I love it. Oh, the two.
Once Upon a Time in America is another one.
Yeah.
I like all those sort of gangstery films. I'm very fascinated by them.
Yeah, me too. Favourite book?
My favourite book is, what's my favourite book? I think Diary of a Drug Fiend by Aleister Crowley.
Oh, you're a bit of a dark horse, aren't you? You don't hang out with Genesis P. Orridge for nothing.
Yeah.
Favourite TV show?
Favourite TV show?
Old or new?
I don't know. The Sweeney. I do like the
Sweeney. Somebody, I asked them.
I don't watch modern TV.
So I asked this question to, I can't remember who it was now, but they said, Callan. Remember Callan?
Oh, that was great. Yeah, Edward Woodward.
Yeah, Edward
Woodward.
Iwa Woowa. Iwa Woowa. Okay. Your favourite other musical artist and composer? Not the human.
John Barry.
It's got to be, isn't it? Visual artist. Come on, you're an artist.
Whoa.
Okay. I love these short answers. They're great. what's the favourite of your own work?
My favourite work of myself, what in terms of music?
Yeah.
Probably the latest album. I can't tell you what it's called.
I think you should just call it.
It's always my last work, but it's my favorite. I can't be retrospective about myself.
Really?
You know, but I'm not very good at curating myself.
We're all different.
My favorite album is Reproduction, right?
Thanks.
Or Travelogues, mate. Well, both of those albums are genius.
No, thank you.
You should do a deluxe double album of that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I don't know if you know about this, but we're performing them both.
I heard today.
But with
them, I'm on the guest list.
I'll put you on the guest list at the Roundhouse in September.
Oh, nice.
Brilliant, yes.
And is Hem 17 performed them? Because Phil, despite asking him for 7 years, won't do it. And I said, we'll do it with Glenn.
Tragic.
So who's going to be singing then?
Glenn. Glenn will be singing.
Right. So you're doing Hem 17.
Present.
And the Human.
Yeah, they won't endorse or take part in it. So, and also, they don't really perform those albums anymore.
I know, because I've seen one of the latest tours.
So I said, look, fuck it. I love those albums.
They're great. They're brilliant. They're brilliant. Musically genius. I mean, you can do them even instrumentally.
I'm not milking it, by the way, podcast listeners. I'm not putting up signs saying applause here.
We'll be there. We'll be there.
Ambition unfulfilled.
Ambition unfulfilled. Blimey, I don't know. It's had a number one album.
Okay.
In the UK.
Okay, fair enough. And finally,
never done that.
Never done that. Right. I don't know. Have I? Oh, I've done it with Erasure. Yeah. Synth. Your favourite synth. Finally.
My favourite is Prophet 5.
Is it? Oh, that's very direct and straightforward.
Yeah. No, that has always been my favourite synth. No messing.
Just to let you know that I've done about over 50 of these interviews now, and there's only been two synths that have been replicated. Everybody else has picked different synths. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I just think it's... nobody said Prophet 5 yet.
Amazing. Well, there we go.
There you go.
What
an absolute pleasure. You've got to send me your email address so we can arrange this.
As soon as we finish, I'll get in touch with Chris, and I presume you've been liaising with him.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then we could talk about, well, I'll come and meet you and we could talk about this Northern Soul.
Yeah, you've got to come up and hear the 3D sound system anyway.
No, I'd love to. That'd be brilliant. Yeah. Wonderful.
Cool, man. What
absolute,
an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much as well.
See you soon. Okay.
Touch the screen. See you later.
Bye. Well, there he is. What a lovely guy. Dave Ball. The genius, and I'm going to say that fully cognizant of the fact that I don't use that term very often for people, but the genius behind Tainted Love and the 12-inch version of Tainted Love mixed with Where Did Our Love Go, which is a floor filler whenever I play my DJ sets live. I think he knows his stuff really well, and I can completely understand why people for many years went to him as a remixer and put things together in a contemporary format. He was part of the whole acid and rave scene and Ibiza and all that stuff with The Grid, and I've got a lot of respect for his work, and strangely enough I never met him before, so there you go. That's very interesting, isn't it? How is everybody coping? Just when it looked like, this is, where am I now? We are at near the end of, just near the start of July. Just when I thought everything was working out nicely and lockdown was due to end, all my plans for finding a flat in Venice seem to be getting delayed now because the Italians have just brought in a quarantine period at their end when you arrive there, and going there and back and the quarantine period at my end means it's very difficult for me to get there and back in between Heaven 17 gigs, whether or not they're happening. Who knows? The government seems to be making it up on the back of a fag packet, as usual, so we simply don't know. And also the number of cases is rising pretty fast at the moment, which is a bit worrying. So I'm hoping the whole scenario will, they're still talking about potentially the whole scenario being much easier after mid-July. Does that mean that all the gigs will be on as they're meant to be? Oh, I don't know. It's really difficult. I just wish it would all go away now. It's just proving to be an absolute pain in the arse for all concerned, much worse than that for a lot of people, not just hard to deal with from a professional point of view, but threatening livelihoods and threatening lives. So they need to get, the government need to get their shit together, but I'm not holding my breath. It's email time again. I'm going to start with, where are we? Sean Nasiri. Hi, Martin. Like many before me have expressed, your show has been a true positive during lockdown, keeping me going when many things around me were crumbling. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you. As the world starts to reopen in the US, I'd taken my first trip to visit my family in 17 months. On the drive back from San Diego to Oakland, I was trapped in traffic for 4 hours due to a truck fire in the mountains north of Los Angeles. No movement, no cell meant no streaming music or phone calls. I suddenly remembered I'd downloaded all the episodes of Electronically Yours. May I recommend? That's a great idea. Popped on your interview with Mr. Hook and proceeded to laugh out loud for about an hour. Thank you for bringing joy in the form of music and interviews for over 40 years. Your art has been foundationally my development as a person. Dear me. Thank you. That's very kind. I was set to see you in London on my birthday in March of 2020, still hoping I would be able to travel across that great wide ocean and see you. And thank you for continuing to be a strong supporter of the left. Too many of us have become hateful right-wing nuts, and your willingness to call people like John Lydon out will always be appreciated. He is a bit of a dick, even though he's an old friend of mine. I don't know what's going on. I think he's just, he needs constant attention. I'd like to request a future guest who is slightly out of left field. Film director and composer John Carpenter. Completely agree. I love John Carpenter. If I could find a way of contacting him, or if anybody knows, let me know. His soundtracks and their use of the synthesizer as the primary instrument seems like a great fit for the show. Absolutely. Thanks again. Thank you, Sean. That's very kind of you. If anybody wants to email me, my email address is electronicallymartin, Martin with a Y, remember, @gmail.com. Praise, grumble, ideas for sections, ideas for guests, anything that you particularly like. You know, because I'm constantly modulating the direction of the way the types of people I interview go. I'm on the trail, and I've been speaking with various people who are waiting for the right time to talk to me, or just don't want to talk to me. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe they're just being polite. I've got a few in the queue now who I would really like to get in the can. But they are not available at the moment. And I think you'll be fairly impressed. That's it for this week. Any of you are struggling or you have any problems, don't be sad. Think about the future. It's not all gloomy. Things will resolve. It's been tough for everyone. If you really are struggling and you've got no one to talk to, just send me an email and I'll see what we can do. No, I can't wave a magic wand to make it all go away, but, sometimes all that's needed is just to talk to people. And please don't forget to send me, you know, emails and try and get on it. You know, they don't have to be confessional. But try and keep them as concise as you can, because otherwise I won't be able to read them out. So there we go. Here we are at this really the start of a new phase. Hopefully we'll be able to perform live starting from the end of July. It's our first gig. And hopefully I'll be able to do a collaboration with Dave Ball. That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Based around Northern Soul and electronics, which is kind of getting back to the raw DNA of Tainted Love, I suppose. That would be fun. Very much fun. Okay, that's all. Another amazing guest in a few days. Have a nice few days. Bye!